Now it's time to be educated and entertained by the country's most famous environmental scientist, Joey Bia's research grizzly bears, wolves, and birds of prey. He continues to travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Be ready to be amazed. Here's your host, Joey B.
Hello and welcome to Joey B. Outdoor Science and Nature. Man, do I have the coolest job. I travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Today in the studio is my good friend Inspector Dave, and we're going to talk all about those seed catalogs you've been receiving probably daily. Inspector Dave, welcome to the show.
Thanks again for having me. Always fun to be in the studio.
You know, we're going to talk about so many different, and Inspector Dave, we don't get any money from these companies. And if you happen to mention a name, I mention a name of a company, all of that's good. Because if we can help an American seed company, that is great. Now, Inspector Dave, here's my first thing. We're all receiving this barrage of catalogs and emails, and it seems like we're pushing this season. So to date, how many do you think you've received so far?
I'm getting at least 2 emails a day since before Thanksgiving, and I've already have 4 catalogs that have come. It's just an amazing how much they're pushing the season here that much more. I call it the quest for seed supremacy.
Actually, that's a pretty good title for that one. So you get your catalog. So let me ask you, do I just order from one company or do I order from many companies? What's your thoughts?
I always find it's good to look through a number of catalogs and compare varieties that they have and sort compare prices. And the main thing you have to look at is occasionally you'll find that a seed supplier has an exclusive seed that they have, that's one of their big offerings. So you may find yourself buying from 2 or 3 suppliers just so you get the exact seeds that you want for your particular gardening application.
So speaking of just what your comment right there, so you're opening a catalog, we'll say for the first time of a new company or a company you've never received a catalog from. What features do you look for, like in the descriptions?
Well, it's important that you're looking for the spacing and the size of the plant. That's the very first thing you need to look at, because that really brings you into an area if you're going to do bush plants versus vining plants, things that are compact, not compact. Because spacing, as we've talked about many times in the past, is the number one thing we have to keep in mind. It's that how much space do we really have to work with? And all of us look at, I can grow all these things in there. Well, no, you can't. Unfortunately, we're all limited by space mostly. And we're talking mostly vegetables here today, and backyard gardening is the main thing. We're not talking about farming, you know, big acres of property. This is just our small backyard hobby garden that we work out of. And some of the other things we look for are, has AAS, is like a contest they have every year, and certain seeds that go through competitions. That's a big thing you look for, that they were a winner of that over the last 10 or 20 years. Staff favorites is another thing they use. And some of the catalogs have little coatings, little asterisks or little stars, all different ways, easy to grow, tasteful, for the beginner, for the advanced person, and just looking for all the little notes they give you there, footnotes especially.
So here's, you get a catalog, you open it up, and I'm going to do 2 specifics. You look and there's pages of beans or pages of corn. Like, why?
I think it's to keep the writers in business, because you keep all the people that are writing the descriptions, and you can look at 30 different types of corn, and they all sound different, and they all sound delicious. To me, that's a remarkable use of the English language by these writers, that they can come up with that many different descriptors and adjectives and all the different words to make each one sound different. But there's uniqueness to each of these seeds that you're buying, and again, you're looking back at what kind of space do you have to deal with, and what kind of flavors are you looking for.
In your organic garden, what would be your favorite bean to grow?
I like growing the bush beans right now because they're just easier to deal with. A lot of the new bush beans that are out there have a very good disease-resistant package with them, because beans can be tricky to grow, but they have a shorter season, so you can get your beans a lot quicker as to making pole beans or vining beans, where you got to build a teepee and a pole and the string and all that. It takes time, and it takes a lot longer for those beans to produce. So I like the bush beans because they're quick. I can put a few different varieties in, I can plant them kind of compact and close to each other, and I still get either purple beans or green beans or yellow beans out of them. I usually grow three different types because I like to have a medley of colors and flavors in my bean dish.
And what is your favorite corn?
Well, the corn, the Seedware Super Sweets that are out there now from Pine Tree Garden Seeds has some good corns, and Vermont Bead Seed Company, they have some good some. They're under superseeds.com. Both of those companies have really good corn products that are especially good. But when you're looking for corn, you want to make sure you get seed that's untreated, because it's important that you grow seed that has no chemicals, using seed that has no chemicals on it, and also that it's non-GMO. A lot of corns have gotten the genetically modified stuff done to them now. So you don't want to really have that. You want to make sure you have non-GMO seeds. Those are very, very important to have that for corns. And then another thing with corn is that you got to decide if you want yellow corn, white corn, or bicolor corn, the best of the two worlds. I like the bicolor personally.
And I've got to say this, I've eaten many an ear of corn from your garden, and it is spectacular. So I know that's your personal favorite out of your garden, but I got to say this, it's got to be one of my favorites too out there. It's just great. Now, so we're planting some corn. What about isolation of corn and a few other vegetables?
Well, certain corns especially, and some vegetables require isolation. The super sweet corns and some of the more exotic corns that are out there are still safe to grow. They're not GMO, but they require isolation so that the pollen that's on there that goes from the tassels down to the silks is unique to that plant, and it can't crossbreed with other plants, other corn plants, because then you get a lesser quality product. It might even revert to like a pig corn or something like that that's not edible. So that it's important to know about isolation, because it can be fairly long. It's not just the wind you're isolating from, it's also from bee activity. And remember, bees can move pretty far when they're doing their pollination thing. So if you have a neighbor a couple gardens or a couple yards over doing a garden, we need to confer with them to say, hey, you're growing corn this year? If you are, let's make sure we grow the same type. And hopefully you guys all get together and one buys seed for the other one, and that, and you share it. And that way you can assure that you each have great corn that year. And occasionally there's a few other vegetables. Corn is the biggest one, though. You have to watch for isolation.
Now, and we often joke about this one, because in your organic garden right now, you're still picking some carrots. So tell me about the color carrots that you grow.
Well, this year we put a rainbow mix in. So we had white, orange, and kind of like a pinkish one, you know, that came out there. So they were kind of interesting. There's like a red one, but I didn't get maybe one or two of those that came up. So they must be a little harder to germinate. But we like that little medley, just something different to have a taste competition.
Well, let me also say this. We always take and do the blind taste test by you with your corn, not your corn, your carrots. And we always find out that the white one, for whatever reason, in our family, the white one, we just happen to like the best. And that is 100% of people in the family doing the blind taste test. We just do that every year with all the fun carrots that come out of your garden there. Now, can you purchase plants from a catalog?
Sure. Many of the catalogs now, they offer different types of plants already growing for you. And Gardens Alive does this, and almost all the companies now are offering that. And the reason for that is that a lot of times we don't have the space or the time to start seed indoors. We don't have a little greenhouse area or a good window or just the time. It takes a little bit of time to do that. So you can buy the plants online or through the catalog, and then they ship them to your house all packaged up really nice, and then they're ready to go. And the idea of doing this is that you can get varieties that may not be available at your local nursery, so you have a little bit more to choose from. I think you have a supplier that does a lot of live plants, right?
Well, you know what? Chiliplants.com, and you know, I've done research for them, so I'm giving them a plug, but the legitimacy of it is they have 500 different types of peppers from around the world. So you can get a pepper from Zaire to, you know, I'll go backwards in the alphabet, to Algeria. They have tomatoes from around the world, eggplants and basil. So you can go to chiliplants.com and find them there. So you know, there's all these different places, like you're saying, and Chili Plants now sell, it's funny, they're doing the reverse. They now sell seeds where they never used to do that, where the seed companies are now selling live plants too. And this show is brought to you by Ramsey Outdoor Stores. Whether you shop online or one of their stores, your experience will successfully gear you up for your next adventure. Go to RamseyOutdoor.com. So let's talk about, you're looking through these catalogs. How do you make your selections?
Well, a couple of things I use. History is a big part of my selection process. Having the journals and pictures from previous years to know a particular seed variety that was really good or maybe really bad, didn't meet my expectations or exceeded them. You know, that's a big part of looking for seeds. So you will develop, as you garden over the years, you'll develop a couple of favorites that are like your main crops that you buy in different varieties, whether it's beans or cucumbers or things you grow from seed. The other things I look for is the days to maturity. And that's important, the days to maturity, because that indicates how fast the plant will produce. And that's especially good for short season or long season areas, so you can match the plant to your growing season. So if you live in an area where your gardening season is short, obviously you want plants that mature quicker. Whereas if you have a very long growing season, you can use plants that take a lot longer to produce. And some of the longer producing plants may have slightly more flavor and more nutrition, obviously because they're growing for a longer period of time and pick up nutrients over a longer period of time. So that's important. So that, again, going back to that compact versus vining versus requires support, you know, look for those key words in there to know the size of the plant that you're going to be putting in there. And then always looking for that disease package. Most of us, especially in areas where there's a lot of rain or moist areas, we suffer, our gardens suffer from a lot of disease impact. So we don't want to have to spray our plants like every other day trying to control disease. It's just, even though there's some good sprays out there that are organic in nature, it's time consuming, it's expensive, and it's just something we want to get away from if we can. So looking for plants that have a built-in disease resistance can really save you a lot of headaches and certainly keep the garden more interesting, especially if you have young children that you're gardening with. You want to make it so they're not in any way deterred by the plant not growing well. So, oh, mom or dad, my plant died. And you want to get away from that. You want plants that are going to be healthy for the kids so they get a good positive experience out of gardening.
So I know that you're a big history man in regard to, you write journals and all this. Should I be making charts of my garden as well?
Well, that's important for charting for a couple of reasons. First, for crop rotation, so that we can rotate our crops from not growing the same thing in the same row every year. And that's hard to do on small gardens, but you try to adhere to that as best you can. And then it also gives you an idea on your spacing as you're measuring out your garden and looking at the plants you're going to grow. You know how much space you need for each one. Where if a walkway gets overrun by an aggressive plant, the walkway is not super critical to get to another part of your garden. And just, it's a way to remember, because you're buying your seed maybe during the winter time and you're not going out there for another 3 or 4 months. So it just keeps you on track as to how you were going to plant and lay your garden out that year.
So you've said this many times in the past, planning is definitely important. So my next question is, do you ever do any experimental crops?
Oh, sure. That's the whole fun of gardening, like experiment. Like everybody who gardens should grow at least one new thing or new variety of crop or something they've never done before, whether it's a brand new bean that came out or a brand new squash or just a spin on something that you've had for a long time. But we always want to try one new thing. You know, life's too short to just do the same thing year after year. You want to experiment. You might come on to some really, really good plant that does well in your little microclimate in your backyard. So that's what you're looking for, that maybe that new plant that came out, a new variety, a new hybrid. And hybrids aren't necessarily bad. Hybrids sometimes get a little bit of a bad name, but a hybrid plant is really, they're just taking the best traits of a particular species and making that, they make it so that they keep breeding it so that you get a better seed that grows a healthier plant that will produce more good flavor. So you're not modifying it genetically. It's just taking the best of the strongest plants.
Now, you spoke about experimenting. Tell us about and I happen to know this story, about the experiment with your squash in your garden this summer.
Well, they came out with a new spaghetti squash this year that it was a combination spaghetti squash hybrid, spaghetti squash and delicata squash. It was a crossover. And it was advertised as compact. I think, okay, that sounds pretty cool. I like delicata and I like spaghetti squash. They had the best of two worlds, and that and a little butternut. So I put some seeds in, and next thing I know, they're growing, and they're growing pretty aggressively. And I'm watching, they're setting fruit pretty early. I said, ah, that's good, getting early fruit, so they'll have plenty of time to ripen up before a frost comes. And then they just kept going and going. They never stopped. It was really equivalent to like a pumpkin. Like if you ever grow pumpkins, a lot of times they'll take off and take over your whole yard. So these didn't take the whole yard, but they took a good percentage of the garden this year.
I remember some of your pepper plants, and you have the cages for your pepper plants, and all of a sudden I come back a week later and you don't see the pepper plants because that squash was like, you know, covering the pepper plant on that one.
I was going to the store and buying pantyhose to tie them up with and all that because they were hanging. I was worried about them falling off the cage, and I was worried about the cage collapsing and, you know, the plants. But everybody ended up surviving. We ended up still getting lots of peppers, and we did get a lot of squash, and I'll be eating those probably well into January. They're very good keepers. So it's good quality fruit. It's just I'm not sure if I want to give that much space up in the future.
So I've read this, and I read it actually in one of your new articles. It's, what is the Safe Seed Pledge?
Well, the Safe Seed Pledge is one of the things you want to look for when you're picking your seed supplier. It should be right in the front of the catalog. And it just means that they're not chemically treating their seeds at this supplier. They're non-GMO seeds, and they may have certified organic in there too. So you want companies that will not sell any seeds that are poison, basically, in my book.
Yeah, and that actually, really, it's like we're looking for, and what you really need in a lot of the catalogs now, you can actually order organic seeds. So we're getting closer and closer to being pure, and that's pretty neat. Now, we talk about, like, again, there's the large box stores of life and then smaller and these seed companies. Is customer service important to you?
Oh, it's really important. You call like a little small seed company up, maybe had a question on an article that's in the magazine or a particular variety that they have. You just want a question answered, or you don't want to order online. You want to talk to a person and just go over it. It's nice to get a person on the phone who's like, down home, family style type business, you know, friends and neighbors work there at the business. And they're just regular people to talk to. I mean, we're gardeners. We want to exchange information and talk to each other and learn. We don't want to just deal with a big computer somewhere. It's nice to have a real friendly person on the phone, maybe a regional accent. It's kind of fun talking with them. And you have a different accent, so you're going back and forth a little bit and having fun. And it just makes the day, it just makes the process so much more fun.
And you know something, and as you alluded to, and they're also experts in the field. So you're going to ask a question. Again, you're reading a catalog or you're reading online, but you can actually ask the question and get the real live answer right there. And I think that's important as well. Now, do you start all of your seeds in the garden, which is called direct planting, or do you actually start some inside? Like, why would we do one or the other?
Well, the idea of starting seeds inside is, first of all, you have to make sure you have space and the time to do that because it's a little labor intensive. The idea of starting inside is you can select the exact seed that you want. Let's say you're growing tomatoes. You can go into the catalog and buy the exact seed you want for the exact plant, which may not be available at the local nursery. So that variety may not be around in your local area, but you can find it there. So the idea of starting inside is that you have more control over what you select. I do a lot of direct seeding because I just think it makes for a healthier plant, and it's just less time consuming, and I wait till the soil's warmed up with my soil thermometer and all. So I like direct seeding because the way the plant's right there, ready to go, it grows quick, and it doesn't go into any kind of shock during a transplant.
Well, when you reading the catalog, and you're talking about descriptions before, will they give me instructions about actual planting?
Yes, all the catalogs now have pretty much put a little call-out box on each section, like in with the peas or in with the beans, and they list the soil temperatures that you'll need, what air temperatures you need, you know, whether it's frost is going to really bother it or if you can get away with it a week or two on the push, the moisture requirements, the sun requirements. So it gives you a good basic understanding of, okay, I do have conditions that are correct for growing that type of seed, and these are things I need to think about. The soil temperature has become really, really big in all the catalogs, and I've really started to observe it now. I've invested in a soil thermometer, and it's a great way to ensure when you're direct seeding that you're not wasting seed, that you're getting the seed in there at the optimum time. You're not waiting too long when the soil's too hot, but you're not wasting it when the soil's too cold either, so it won't germinate.
Now, as you just mentioned, so this is the next leading question to that. Should I be buying packets of seeds or pounds of seeds? Because you, in that catalog, you could see both listed.
Right. So the packets, if you're just doing a little backyard garden, the packets that are available for most of the seeds you're going to be buying are more than you're ever going to need to plant your garden. The only time I buy like a half a pound of seeds or a pound of seeds if I'm buying sugar snap peas, because those I plant really dense and I put a lot of them in. So those I may buy a few more, but almost everything else that I buy is I just buy the one packet. And now some of the smaller companies have what they call like a backyard packet, I guess you could say, where it's a half size packet. And most of the time, you're going to find as you garden that a lot of your seeds that you buy never get planted because you've run out of space to plant them. And these seeds are now are just kind of laying around waiting. So you don't need that giant packet of seeds. You're never going to plant the whole packet.
All right. So if I don't plant the whole packet, what do I do with leftover seeds?
Well, again, you have maybe you have friends or neighbors or relatives that are gardeners. And it's a good way to have a little local seed exchange, like give you two corns for three beans, you know, or whatever. You can exchange back and forth, and another chance for you to experiment maybe with something that person has. And another thing you can do with them is you have a local community garden. It's a good place to donate some of your surplus seed to them too. So it gives them an idea to things to plant too. It gives them variety.
Now you get that catalog, and I know in the back there's some other items. What else would I find inside the catalog?
Well, most catalogs now have tools and gadgets you can buy, fertilizers, different kind of books that they have here. Some have household projects. Gardens Alive has a lot of household projects, products rather, and pet products that are in there also. So that gives you a good variety of things. So it's not just seeds. And, you know, maybe that's one of the reasons they're pushing some of these catalogs early, so people can Christmas shop for tools and books and all for their friends that are gardeners.
Actually, you know what? That'd be a great idea because, again, one of my recent podcast shows was Christmas gifts for the, you know, for the outdoors person. The outdoors person isn't just somebody who hikes, and they're the gardeners as well. And actually, and I fielded this question over to you, and I put it in that podcast show because, you know, there's some of the little kneeling pads, there's the small garden tools and all that that would make great Christmas gifts. So, next question is, what about online catalogs?
Well, all your catalogs that come in the mail will have an online portal that you can go to order your seeds. And I find this is useful too because when you go onto the websites that they have for each catalog, a lot of times there's more information there about that particular seed that you're looking at. There may be some customer reviews. And that's especially good because you can get a better idea of what the real world application and use of the seed is compared to what you're just reading about that the professional wrote up. It'll give you a little bit more. And sometimes it'll give you like, yeah, this seed is like really great. It's got 5 stars. Or you may see a seed in there and people are giving it like 2 stars. Like, this stuff's really not that good. You know, don't waste your money on it. So it's good to get that information from another gardener, and you just put that into your information pipeline there and you sort it all out to try and make decisions on that. And then, of course, they can take your credit card and you get points back and emails and tracking for your shipping and all that. So there's a lot of pros to the online, you know, type thing. Save a stamp.
Now we've looked through all the catalogs, we've made our choices, we're going to order seeds. So here's the deal. When do you personally order your seeds and why?
I tend to put my orders in maybe January, more into February, so I don't get them too far ahead. That way the supplier has to stockpile his seeds, so he keeps them in a regular place that's good for the seed, so it's healthy for the seed to maintain their viability. But I don't wait too long because certain seeds can be very popular and they can be sold out. And then they substitute the seed there. So you're trying to kind of balance that. I don't want to have them laying around for too long around the house, but I also want to make sure I can get what I want, that it's not sold out.
Now, when you receive the seeds at your house, how do you keep, again, let's just play the make-believe. I ordered them in January and they shipped them in January. What am I doing? Where do I store them at my home?
Okay, the best place to store them is in a cool place in a glass container with little packets of desiccant in there that take the moisture out. And that's the best way to keep the seed very viable so that it's the ideal storage conditions until you're ready to use it.
And where would you keep that at your house? Would it be a refrigerator? I know many gardeners, that's where they go.
Yeah, I keep it in a refrigerator. It's a glass container, or if you have a really cool basement area, you know, that's okay too. And then it's important, it's a sealed container, you know, with the moisture control device in there.
That is really neat. And you know what? Before this show, I didn't realize there were so many different things I needed to know before I actually placed that order. So Inspector Dave, as usual, I wanted to thank you for coming into the studio, clearing up all these things we needed to know, because now all these people can't get out there and garden. So I just wanted to thank you so much.
Oh, it's great coming here. See, I got the joke of the day for you. Says, do you know what Korn's favorite song is?
Korn's favorite song? No, I don't.
Amazing Grace.
Ba-dum-bum. Hey, that is a great way to end the show. Until next time, enjoy life's adventures. You can follow all of my adventures online at joeybee.tv. That's joeybee.tv. And a very special thank you to the men and women of our armed forces for keeping us free, and for our police and firefighters for keeping us safe. May God bless America. Until next time, this is Joey B. Enjoy life's adventures.